Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Please, enjoy the show. I'm Zach Burchie. Joining me back, it's the return of the Super Manga Pals. We are assembling once more. It's manga.about.com's Deb Aoki. Deb, thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
And mangaworthreading.com and mangaoutloud.com podcast, Ed Sizemore. Ed, thank you for coming back.
Hi, and I've gotten a new costume, too, as part of the new 52.
Is it especially form-fitting or something?
It has faux armor, just like Superman.
Wait, Superman needs an armor? I thought he's like... Oh, never mind. I'm not even going to get to try to explain logic of super heroes. It's a fool's errand.
Before we get into it, I'm very curious about this. What have you guys been reading? And I want to start with Deb. What have you been reading? What's really caught your eye? What should people go out and check out?
I've been reading Nononba, which is by Shigeru Mizuki. It's a one-shot volume from Drawing Quarterly. It's basically the Shigeru Mizuki manga that I really, really wanted to read. It's about him growing up and this woman that he calls Nononba, who tells him all about yokai. So it's kind of like, it's semi-autobiographical and it's pretty whimsical and but it's also interesting because it's like pre-war Japan and it's kind of hard to describe, but it's really interesting because the way that the different yokai interact with him and, you know, how he deals with the other children and he is friends with and adults in his life. His father is very disappointing in various ways. It's a really interesting book. Have you read it yet?
Yeah, I've read it. My description is it's nostalgic, without being sentimental. It's very brutally real. I mean, he is like in the course of this book, two of his friends will die from one from a disease and one from an accident. So it's not like a rose-colored glasses childhood, and he's very honest about his father's shortcomings and the problems that causes the family. But then there's also, you know, interspersed with these kind of grim realities is this tale of, you know, Nonoba and yokai in this kind of magic other world that he as a kid thinks, you know, lives and breathes among us. And so it adds a sense of kind of mystery and magic to an otherwise kind of mundane life. It's really well done. I really like it. Yeah, I was kind of happy we got this one.
Let's see, what else have I read? I've read Fallen Words, also, but from Drawn and Quarterly. It's Yoshihiro Tatsumi. It's his latest volume. This is really different for him. It's more like his illustrations of Rakugo stories, which is kind of like. It's not really stand-up comedy. It's kind of like storytelling, like fables. So it's kind of like traditional Japanese storytelling where they tell these, you know, moralistic these stories that kind of have a moral at the end, kind of these little humorous twists. So for, you know, Tatsumi, this is his most current work, and he's maybe 80 now. So it's a little softer, a little lighter, a little more kind of look. He still is taking a look at human nature. But it's much more, I think, gentle in a way, not as sardonic, not as dark. It's an interesting read. I don't think it's his best work, but I think it is an interesting read.
Yeah, I finished that too. I like it a lot. I think it's actually, other than A Drifting Life, it's his most accessible. I mean, the problem with Pushman and his Gekika stuff is that it's so dark at times. You feel like he's saying, you know, life is this horrible misery. The lucky ones are the ones who die young. And so this one doesn't have that kind of grim, you know, I wish we were all dead kind of darkness.
That speaks to when he created both books, you know. I mean,
right.
When he created those earlier books, that was the 70s. He was this young rebel, kind of like, you know, kind of, I guess, kind of reacting against comics that he saw as being unrealistic, you know, not showing what life's really like, not showing, you know, the darker side of human nature. Whereas now, you know, he's in his 80s and he's, you know, I mean, he's a really interesting guy. He's a really smart guy. He's seen a lot. He's done a lot. He's actually been finally gotten recognized for his art in a way, you know, that I don't think he ever expected. There's a movie made about him now. Did you ever see this? It's called Tatsumi. It was made by, I think it was an Indonesian filmmaker, where they created this interspersed biography. It's kind of like weaves together the drifting life with his stories from Pushman and so on and so forth.
Hmm.
So no, it's really interesting. It's beautifully done. There's a trailer online, you can check it out. But it's kind of like a motion comic. It's very beautiful. So I mean, you know, it got shown at Cannes, and you know, so you when you see Tatsumi, you see he's kind of an older man who's maybe kind of made his peace with the world, and that's what you kind of see in Fallen Words. Other things I've read Madoka Magica, the first volume of the manga.
Deb, it's pronounced Madoka Magica.
Is it really?
Yeah,
oh my god,
it is.
I feel like when I was a kid and I used to say spatula. And it's spatula. Anyway.
Look, the pronunciation is fucking dumb. I hate it. I hate it myself. But anyway, go on.
Oh, I'm almost afraid to say it now because I can't even pronounce it. Anyway, I like it a lot. I mean, I've not watched the anime yet. And everyone's telling me I have to watch the anime. But, you know, it's kind of like the other Yen Press manga, that came out earlier, sort of Durarara, which basically is very faithful to the anime, but kind of, you know, retells the story in manga format, which I find very nice and digestible. I've read Until Death Do Us Part, which is another Yen Press story about a young girl who's kind of psychic. She can tell the future, and then she escapes with this man who is blind, but he has the ability. He's gotten an operation so that he can see objects through these kind of, I guess some kind of surgery or something. Anyway, I'm still trying to like sift through this book. It's a difficult read because it's full of details, but it's very interesting. The other thing I just picked up was In These Words by Jo Chen and I think Togakyu, and I forget what their pen names are. They go by pen names of Guilt Pleasure. This is from Digital Manga from their 801 line. It's basically about a FBI trained profiler who is trying to find a serial killer. And this particular serial killer is a sadistic guy who likes to slash up young men while he has sex with them.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So it's really intense bondage, torture.
Okay.
Beautifully rendered. It's kind of like Silence of the Lambs 7 kind of thing, but with two hot men.
Okay, Deb.
Do with that what you will. Jo Chen is a amazing drafts person. It's beautifully drawn. It's not a beautiful story.
Hey. No, nobody's judging you for reading this.
But it is, it's okay. If you're curious, go check it out. But be warned, if you have a weak stomach and you don't like seeing men getting violated.
You're in a safe space. No one's judging you.
it's not for don't leave it to your grandma.
Ed, what have you been reading?
Well, I'm still following 20th Century Boys and have been enjoying that. And now that Viz has finally given us release dates for the final volumes, I'm kind of happy. Just have to wait till I think January for the series to finish. And then Wandering Sun, we're going to get a new volume. I think it's going to premiere at at Comic-Con. So
volume 3. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying that, and that's it's a series that every time I read a volume, it gets a lot deeper under my skin, and it has me thinking about lots of issues, and so it's been really good, challenging for me to kind of try to understand what these kids are going through, because it's something so foreign to my own existence. Mm. I'm not an attractive man. I mean, I'm bi-speckled, bald, and fat, so I can understand not being comfortable in your skin, but you know what these kids are going through, and the fact that they are fundamentally uncomfortable with you know the basic gender of their body and how they feel like their entire body is foreign to them. That kind of level of like self alienation is something I don't understand. And so, you know, this series is really good about getting you to think outside of your comfort zone a little bit. And it's done so subtly, so unpretentiously. And I think that's why it works so well, because they're never presented as like freaks or, as unusual. They're just presented as normal kids, and this is the struggle that they have to go through in their lives. It's been a really good series for me. I like that one a lot. And then I caught up on Saturn Apartments. Volume 5 came out this month, and that's a really nice kind of slice of life sci-fi. I compare it to Aria in a sense, where it's more about daily living and, you know, learning to find joy in the people you know, in the work you're doing, kind of this pursuit of excellence in your job. It just happens to be within a sci-fi setting, that which is more background and not really important to the story as much. So, that's a really good one. And it's only 7 volumes. So now that it's finished, I'm kind of hoping that Viz will speed up its release, because they've been doing 1 volume every 6 months. So... but that's a really good series. Those have been the ones I think I've been enjoying the most lately.
All right. So in advance of these shows, I always try and read a little bit. you know,
don't make it sound so painful, Zach.
Well, no, I don't read that much manga. In the past couple of months, I bought an iPad 3, and. Frankly, like, it's so much easier and better to read manga that way. I don't think they're using Retina graphics resolution right now.
Actually, that was a question that came up at the Viz panel at Fanime.
Yeah, good. Hopefully they'll say, like, oh, we should...
Yeah, so that it's on their radar.
double or triple the resolution of these image files, and we'll be really happy. But, you know, they give you a lot of free shit. Like, if you download the Viz Media app, you get the first chapters of, like, over, like, a dozen. It's like 20 comics you can just read for free.
Nice.
And you just get, like, you get the first chapter for free and all that stuff. I have a press account, and so I got the last two issues, if you want to call them that, of Shonen Jump Alpha. And I did read the reboot of the Rurouni Kenshin manga.
Ah.
Which, I gotta say, did you guys ever read Rurouni Kenshin, like, when it came out? Or as it came out, or even recently, or anything?
That's one of the big holes in my reading.
Yeah, okay, so no.
No, I didn't.
That's a no, so neither of you ever did. Do you ever watch the anime, anything? Ever?
I watched the TV series for, I think, the first season.
Okay, so that's something.
I'll admit, I mean, I have all the Viz Big Rurouni Kenshin. I was going to, like, cram and, okay, this is a big hole in my reading, and this is, like, canon, like, I have to know this stuff.
Sure.
So
it's being rebooted now. The same guy who wrote and drew it in the first place is doing it again. And I don't know how many times in history this has actually happened, but it's very condensed.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's very condensed. It's the manga starts with There's a prologue where Kenshin is already fighting Saito, who is a member of the Shinsengumi at the time, who becomes an ally later on. And they kind of gloss past the whole Hitokiri Batosai, which is the legendary killer of the Meiji era. And then they cut right to, like, Ed, you watched the first season of the show. They cut right to, like, the way the comic is now, he is drafted into appearing in, like, a circus show. Like, kind of a circus kind of a show. Two warriors fight each other in a recreation of historic battles by Yahiko. And he's fighting Kaoru. And those two fight, and then he finds out about the Kamiya Dojo and all that shit. And they settle the entire first, like, Ed, do you remember this plot from the first season of the TV series where there was, like, a businessman and he had a Gatling gun?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that, yes.
They get through that entire story in the first chapter of this thing.
Wow.
The first chapter of this thing is just
Because my
that.
Understanding was the reason why they did this reboot is because there's the live-action movie.
Are you sure? Yeah.
So it's meant to more mirror what happens in the movie?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know how long it's supposed to go on. Is it just supposed to be like, here's a bunch of chapters from this, you know, movie tie-in? Like, is this no more substantial than, like, a, you know, like the battleship tie-in at, like, your local Burger King?
It's not really clear to me, because, like, that my understanding was, and mind you, I haven't really dived into it yet, was that it's a retelling of the story from another point of view. Yeah, is that true?
No, not that I can tell.
Really?
Not that I can tell. It's still told from Kenshin's viewpoint, and Kenshin is still does a stupid fucking...
Hey, you're swearing more than me this time.
Well, he still does that stupid, like, the way the dialogue is written or is translated is, like, he'll talk to people who refer to himself in the third person as this one. So, like, this one wants to pick up this piece of trash. This one wants to help you. This one wants to...
sounds incredibly awkward.
Well, it is. And it's always been really awkward. And, you know, it's really interesting. But the one observation I really wanted to make about this. Watsuki, I don't know what the last manga he drew was, but I feel like just looking at this Kenshin reboot, just looking at these comics, he is taking a lot of cues from, I think, Kota Hirano. A lot of cues. Because the artwork is all... It's really kind of wonky. It's his characters are doing these wild takes. lots of, like, someone leaning back, showing all their teeth, and they have a giant, like, horse's tongue that's, like, flailing out of their mouth, which was a big thing for Kota Hirano. Like, he really liked doing that.
Sure.
And now
Kota Hirano, so he does Drifters and he does Helsing, right?
Yes. This is a lot of it looks the same way. It's a little over the top, and you know, Deb, I hadn't considered that it's only just like a promotional run just for the movie, and it's not going to keep going. But come to think of it, like maybe that's just what this is.
I think so, because I think their intention is to bring the Kenshin movie to release it in America as well.
Well.
It comes out of Japan, I think, in another month or two.
Yeah, I think it's more that Kenshin sells really well here.
Mm.
So even if it is just a movie tie-in comic, they're still going to release it here. And
No, I mean, I don't think that was... I mean, you know, like the Trigun movie was, you know, like was kind of created for the American audience.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, because it's very popular here, but maybe not as popular and iconic in Japan. So... I think similarly here, you know, like, at first when I heard that they were going to do this Kenshin restoration in Alpha, I will admit I was deeply disappointed.
Really?
Well, because I thought, oh, great. You know, they're going to bring another, you know, Shonen Jump title in, you know, because there's so many great Shonen Jump series that people love that aren't being published yet in America. And people, I think Carlo Santos likes Sket Dance, for example. He's mentioned it last year at Comic-Con as his, I want this to be licensed. what was the other one? Skip Dance. There's Madoka Box. I think Sean Gaffney talks about that one a lot. Mm. So there's a lot of Shonen Jump manga that is not licensed in America. And I thought, or even, you know, the people talk about Reborn or, you know, talk about Gintama. Like, oh, you know, it'd be so awesome if, you know, that was in Alpha. And then they say, we're going to go Kenshin. And I went like, what? But mind you, this that my what comes from the fact that I've not read the original series. So I don't have this kind of emotional attachment to it.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, it's great that it's there. It's interesting to see how his art style has changed over the years. I'm not getting anything out of it. further, you know, so I flipped through the rest of Shonen Jump Alpha. Okay. You know, Eiichiro Oda, like, you know, this is what Shonen Jump Alpha is like 2 weeks after the chapters
in Japan. Yes.
They come out in Japan. Yeah. Eiichiro Oda, he needs some more assistance or something because that shit is rough.
Oh, is it?
Like, that is some rough chapters.
Mm. Huh. Like what? I mean, the drawing-wise? Or?
Yeah, just art-wise. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Huh.
Like, I guess when you're the most, you're literally the most successful mangaka in Japan, and all you have to do is just churn out shit every week. I can totally understand that, but art's pretty rough.
Cool.
Not showing a lot of detail. Like, there's a few panels where it's like, here's where the detail is. And then everything else is giant word balloons and just, like, you know, Luffy sort of looking off into the distance. Like, stuff that's easy to draw.
I mean, well, everyone makes fun of, like, Taito Kubo for Bleach for doing a lot of blank backgrounds. Like, you know, the Herkomundo is, you know, very conveniently a vast wasteland. Because that's so much easier to draw than a city.
I feel
like, you know, this whole weekly churn, you know, people are making sacrifices.
Yeah, it's rough.
They figure out ways to churn out the stories every week.
Well, sure, but I'm not sitting here like, oh, that fucking asshole Eiichiro Oda, like, yeah, gosh, why isn't his drawing, you know, this like weekly chapter that he literally just had to shit out at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like he's a dick for making it.
No, I'm not saying he's a dick either, but I'm just saying that I'm starting to think it's physically impossible to maintain.
Sure, but like
that level, a high level of quality by churning out chapters every week.
What's the quote? Like, he has 40 assistants? Is that the quote?
Shit, really?
Isn't that the quote? I thought that was
the
quote.
I never heard that. No.
No? Okay. Well, at some point I heard that he had 40 assistants. That's probably an exaggeration. He probably has like 10 or something.
Yeah, 10 sounds more like it. 40 10. Sounds like he should be doing twice as much. 10 or 20.
But if I were Eiichiro Oda, wouldn't you get to a point where you just train someone to draw exactly like you do? Like, here, do what I do. Mm. Draw these things in exactly the same way. I'm too fucking tired to draw a chapter this week. Just draw it this way. Here's the script. Just make it look like I would make it look. If you had that much money and time and people who would be willing to work for you, wouldn't you just fake it for a little while if you were tired?
Well, he has taken breaks, you know?
Yeah, well, not many.
Yeah, I mean, I do think not many. His stuff is really, I think you could tell, honestly, if someone else was drawing the characters. I mean, obviously, we all kind of know that the way that most manga artists work is that the main artist draws the characters and the assistants draw the backgrounds and do the inking, you know, do the fill in the blacks and stuff like that, do the toning. I do feel like his style is so distinctive that I feel like I could tell if someone else was drawing it.
Okay. Sure.
Subtle, but I think you could tell. I don't know. I mean, to tell you the truth, I like Shonen Jump Alpha. I love the idea that it's weekly instead of monthly now.
Yeah.
But I don't have time to read it every week. it's not an entry-level magazine. I mean, and maybe that's really nice that they're doing Barrage starting from next week.
Sure.
Barrage is the new series that's going to be starting in the next Monday's issue of Shonen Jump Alpha. It is brand new in Japan. It is... I think it only debuted 2 weeks ago, in fact. So this is something very, very new and fresh that they're doing, where they're bringing out a brand new series as it is coming out in Japan in the magazine. So this, you know, while Kenshin was kind of like, when they announced Barrage, I thought, oh, good for them. This is what they kind of should be doing, you know?
No, yeah, I think that's good. Although listening to Zach talk about how rough the chapters are is making me appreciate reading it in graphic novel format only, One Piece.
Well, it gets really touched up. Like, by that point, you've seen it, like, that's the final version of those illustrations. It's not the rough cut, which is, I guess, what you're seeing in Shonen Jump Alpha. You're seeing the rough cut.
Right, right. I mean, all the sound effects are in Japanese, and they're translated on the side, but that speeds things up because, you know, the whole process of, you know, localizing the sound effects and, you know, that takes time. Also, the part where, even the artists, what we're used to seeing in the graphic novels and even in Shonen Jump monthly magazine is this polished up version of the artwork. But we all know that, you know, a lot of times before the graphic novel goes to print, the artist goes back in and cleans things up, you know, makes edits and corrects things and stuff like that. So sometimes what you see in the magazine, what you see in your graphic novel version is slightly different than what you see in the magazine, you know? So I think that's what you're seeing now. And that's actually kind of, you're seeing it as Japan sees it.
Right. And that's also, you know, their attempt to compete with He Who Shall Not Be Named, I guess.
Yes, let's not go there today.
Oh, we will. The Twitter questions cannot be denied. But I am curious, before we move on to Twitter, Ed, let's start with you. How do you feel about the manga industry right now? How do you feel about how it's going? We're past the closure of borders. We're into the new digital frontier. How do you feel?
Well, I think we're still in transition, and I think we've kind of bottomed out as far as sales have gone. But I think what we're seeing is the companies struggle to bring digital to the U.S. And my impression is it's more really on the Japanese side that it's not a question of like Viz or Yen Press not wanting to put stuff digitally. It's a question of convincing the Japanese publishers that they need to do it because they are not seeing any value in digital. And we're in the U.S., I think we're going to see not just the comics market, but the bookstore market is moving more and more in a digital direction. Because I agree with you, Zach. I mean, I have an iPad, and half of what I'm getting from Viz now, I wait for it to be released digitally. Because it's more convenient. I own probably about 30 volumes on the Viz app. Mm-hmm. And my iPad weighs, what, like half a pound as opposed to carrying 30 volumes of manga around. So, and the resolution's good. I mean, it may not be perfect, but, it's fairly decent. I mean, particularly like I think Bakuman looks really nice on the iPad. And that's a good test for resolution, I think, because that's some detailed art. So yeah. I mean, that's just the reality is that publishers are going to have to embrace digital at some point. And I think part of the problem is like for Viz or well for any of them is stuff like 20th Century Boys. I would love to see 20th Century Boys digitally, but that probably means having to go back and renegotiate contracts because obviously when they first started publishing that, digital wasn't even an option at that point. So, same thing with, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that's out of print. Monster, everybody keeps slamming Viz to get Monster back into print. Because now that Urasawa is finally getting some recognition, it would be nice if there was more of a back catalog for comic fans to look at. Other than just 20th Century Boys, because both Pluto and Monster are out of print. And those are the only other two series available in English. So it's just been a little bit frustrating. Sometimes
too, but that's even more out of print.
Oh my God, that's really, really out of print. Yeah. That's true. I do have a copy of that. But so I think a lot of it is, you know, watching publishers struggle to to get out more to go back to the comic book stores for one. Cause like I said, I get the previews catalog from Diamond every month. because I still do some shopping at my local comic book store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching Viz, watching In Press, those sections of the Diamonds of the Previews catalog get bigger. That, you know, they're putting more money into it. You know, before the manga boom into bookstores, Viz and Tokyo Pop and, you know, Del Rey had really nice, expensive layouts in the Previews catalog. I mean, they were really courting the comic book market because at that point they hadn't broken into the bookstore market. And then when they broke into the bookstore market and all the backlash that came from that with the, from the comic fans, you know, it got down to the point where like Viz was almost just line item listings of what they would have available with very little detail. Not every title had a picture to show you the cover. And now they're going back and they're doing some things are getting full page ads. And it's so a lot of it's just, I think, them retooling their marketing strategies to realize, OK, you know, we can't ignore the comic book shops and we can't ignore digital. And so how do we do this? And so it'll be interesting in the upcoming year. I think the big frustration for some of us is J Manga just taking so long to get their apps out and to get rid of that, you know, Flash player. So you can read it on things that don't support Flash, which is mostly Apple products, let's be honest.
Yeah, but you got it. I mean, let's back up a little bit and give J Manga a little props here. I mean, they've been ramping up the releases. They've been releasing more titles twice a week now. They are now available worldwide. They're making steps, you know, and while, you know, it's very much a fandom way to say, oh yeah, 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 yeah. I won't be happy until you give me this. I won't be happy until you give me this. I don't give you this. And then when you give them that, it's like, oh, but you still haven't given me this. You still haven't given me that. I mean, okay. I was sitting at Fanime and I'm going to call out this guy anyway, because I was bitching about him on Twitter. I was at the Fanime panel, and this guy was sitting next to me bitching, oh, they're not going to like announce Inuyasha, the final act. They never do. Oh, I'm not interested in anything else except that. And they announced it. And he goes, oh, great. But you know, they're not going to do this. It's like, oh, I wanted to slap this guy so effing hard. And I had to leave. I left the panel at about halfway through because he was just bitching the whole time. Right. I mean, thank God he didn't smell, because that would have just been insult to injury. But I'm just saying, this is fandom. And it's like, people, right. You know, yes, you're not going to get everything at once, but let's give people let's give them credit when they give you stuff that you asked for.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. And I have blown more than my fair share of money on J Manga. I have a lot of titles that I bought from J Manga, and they've given, you know, they have done some stuff that I really enjoy. I know that's a Twitter question we'll get to later, but anyways. So, I mean, I give them credit because they're bringing a lot of stuff over that would never get licensed because it couldn't make the print run money. A good example is, you know, the Solitary Gourmet, which Jiro Taniguchi did the art for.
Mm-hmm. Or how about those Salaryman Centaurs by SM? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Talk about niche-y. It's incredibly entertaining, but hella niche-y.
Well, and they're bringing over a lot of cat manga, which I'm happy because I'm a cat fan.
Come on, really?
Yes. So, yeah, they've got like, they have one is a Edo cat title that takes place in the Edo period. And then there's a couple other like gag manga for cats. Like
Puyo Puyo or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I Am a Cat and some other stuff. So, yeah, hey, I'm not complaining. I'm getting cat manga, which I never thought I'd see in the United States.
Oh my God. You know that weird Twitter discussion I got in today where this guy was telling me, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name off the top, and you're probably listening to this and you're probably mad at me right now. Where he was saying, oh, but you know, superhero American comics offer variety. You know, they're like, you know, superhero comics with sci-fi, and there's superhero comics with romance, and there's superhero comics with comedy. I said, that's still a burger. it may be a burger with cheese, it may be a teriyaki burger, maybe a burger with bacon, but it's still a fucking burger, you know?
Right.
Deb, I hate to argue in favor of superhero comics here. It's not like Shonen and Shoujo and even Seinen is really all that different from title to title.
No, but I'm saying, but at least there is comics for women and comics for young boys different genres.
Sure. And but like, it's all, you know, just, it's all fucking hamburgers. Can we just,
I guess,
can we agree on that? Like, it's all junk food.
I guess so. I will end up on that.
I would argue you're getting
but
more.
Just, it was saying like, oh, but look at Witchblade. It has a female lead. It's like, oh, come on, man. That's still for a 20-something-year-old man. That's not a woman's comic.
Sure. And there's plenty of manga being made for that exact same customer.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the last person to say, like, you know, people aren't going to get more rich and varied stories out of Seinen or Jose manga or anything like that. You know, of course you're going to get better stories, but most of the time, it's a hamburger.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I agree. Well,
I mean,
people like you and I live to talk about the stuff that's not just a hamburger. Like, that's all we want to do is talk about the stuff that is not just a hamburger. That's what we want.
Oh, I know. Every now and then when we run across something that is more steak-like than hamburger, we get very, very excited.
Right, yeah. Well, but thus is our purpose, right? Like, isn't that our purpose to champion that shit?
Yeah, that's true. I know, it's like, I know, I get, you know, our jobs as people who consume mass quantities of this, thanks to the good graces of the publishers and the distributors, that we are the first line of defense. Oh, this is good. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, this is good, you know. Our jobs is ostensibly to save people their $10 that they would spend something horrible.
I wish that was more true, but, you know, the Shonen Jump fans are going to buy Shonen Jump titles no matter how much you tell them.
Oh, God bless them. Awful.
Oh, I agree. Hey, you know.
I don't, as long as they're buying it.
If Naruto and Bleach are helping to fund, you know, Saturn Apartments, then God bless them, kids, buy more. Because I want more Sigiki. So, you know, buy 4 copies of that Bleach volume, you know. Make sure it makes money.
Well, you know, this is the exact same way Hollywood works.
Mm-hmm. True.
People buy the mass market stuff, and then people like you and I get what we want. Like,
yeah,
it's not a totally mystifying business model. It makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, in the beginning, when manga first came to America, I think you only had a tiny handful of titles, and those were all very handpicked, you know, just the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the stuff that would most appeal to what they thought comic book readers were in America. So you got a lot of seinen, you got a lot of action, you got a lot of sci-fi. Now, then came the flood of like anything of varying quality. And now we're kind of back on the other end of this, on the other end where we're still getting a lot of content and we're still getting a lot of stuff that's of varying quality. But I think they're being a little more picky for the most part. I think that's good, though.
I agree. All right. So we should probably get to Twitter.
Okay.
And ABCB Tom asks, why do you think more seinen and Jose manga aren't getting digital treatments? Is the mature content an issue?
That was something that was mentioned when I talked with Brian Peach, who was the head of digital at Viz. When Shonen Jump Alpha was first announced at New York Comic Con, he did mention that was partly an issue. But I think it's also an issue of resources, that there's, you know, as much as everyone likes to think of, you know, these companies as big megapolises with hundreds of people, like doing their evil, you know, doing, you know, putting the switches and dialing the knobs. I think their resources are finite. So, you know, given that you have to prioritize, obviously it's impossible for them to put out every single title they have in their back catalog digitally. They're doing as many as they can, as fast as they can. But I don't think, you know, they're going to obviously prioritize the ones that are bigger sellers first and the ones that they have digital rights to. as Ed has mentioned before. So partly I think there's always the issue of adult content, meaning like what Digital Manga was going through with Amazon and with iTunes with their Boys Love content, where they've been kind of censored for a period of time or, you know, had their stuff pulled. But, you know, as Digital Manga has mentioned, that when that happened with Amazon, it took one day of fan outcry and their stuff was back up. So I think, you know, that we're dealing with, you know, the outside world, the non-initiated, not being terribly comfortable with manga sometimes.
Mm. Well, and I also think, you know, part of it is we have to remember that digital isn't free. That, let's say, Viz licenses a seinen series tomorrow that maybe they think won't make its money on print, but they still have to pay translators, they still have to pay editors, they still have to pay letters to put it into a digital format. So there's still a fairly high bar of cost even to put it out on their app, on the Viz Manga store. So I think some of it is...
It's Sublime too, right? Sublime is not on the Viz Manga store.
Right. You know, so I think some of it's content, but I also think some of it is just, again, just raw economics. Seinen and Jose has not sold very well here. You know, there's a certain baseline cost to bring a title over that you just can't get around. And you know, Viz has got to look at it and say, you know, even though it may only cost us, you know, let's be conservative, say $4,000 a volume to make this available in English digitally, and we won't have to pay any print run costs. You know, there's some series they may just look at and say, we still can't even make $4,000 a volume on this, selling it digitally. So, you know, you have to remember that it's still a business, and Viz isn't going to go bankrupt just to satisfy, you know, what a small group of consumers wants. They've got to, you know, they've got to look at what sells, be it in print or in digital. So what I've been encouraged about with Viz, though, is that they've been closing that gap between physical and digital release, like I said, with Saturn Apartments, there was only a 2-week delay before it was released, the fifth volume digitally. So that kind of stuff is encouraging, because I think it shows that some volumes are doing well digitally, that their Viz is more aware that digital sales do matter. So the only thing I can tell you is vote with your dollars. If you want to see Jose or Seinen digitally, then you need to go and buy like Saturn Apartments and I'll Give It My All Tomorrow and all those other Seinen and Jose works that are out there. Because if they start making money on them digitally, then they'll start looking at other titles to bring over with them.
I think we forget that, you know, the people who are really into manga have grown up with manga and their tastes have grown into liking Jose and Seinen manga. Sometimes we tend to forget that we're not the majority, you know? We're not a significant majority of who's buying manga out there. It's fine that we raise our voices and we say what we like. But, you know, I mean, let's call it a spade a spade. We're not a significant portion of what's being purchased out there.
Well, that's depressing.
Well, I mean, but things are changing and things are, you know, I mean, I'm seeing 20th Century Boys on the New York Times bestseller list occasionally, you know, Jormungand and so on and so forth. So I am seeing that these titles are selling. They're getting attention. I think it's just a matter of time. I'm only hoping that the teens who are reading, you know, the teen titles now will continue to grow with manga and still continue to love manga and understand that there will be manga that they'll enjoy as they grow older too.
Yeah, I think that's where the struggle has been. My impression, and I'm actually would be interested in your opinion on this, Deb. This has kind of been my impression of the manga market, particularly looking at some of the teenagers in my church, and that is, it seems like kids come into high school and a lot of them pick up manga reading because it's part of like high school culture. You know, we're reading Lord of the Flies and Naruto. And then when they go off to college, some of it is because of the demands of college and then the lack of, disposable income. they end up dropping manga in college. So it seems like the glut of the readership is those high school years, that, you know, 4 year time, because it's part of that culture. And you get some people who will continue with manga after high school, but for most people, that's just something they did when they were in high school, and they kind of leave it behind.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I, we are obviously older people who've been reading comics for a long time, but that's not a given, you know?
ABC Tom asks, again, I like this question, and I'm very curious about this myself. Apple and Amazon have had their issues with yaoi. Anyway, fans can try and fix this.
With Apple? Good luck.
With Apple, I mean, I would just say no.
Yeah,
like just me too. Like, no, you can't fix it.
It's much easier for them, if for a self, for a company like Apple, to go like, oh, that entire genre, no good.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, like I said, as DMP pointed out, if fans, you know, send enough emails, then Amazon conveniently forgets its own policies and they still let stuff sell through. And so
Amazon sells porn, so yeah. There was clear hypocrisy there.
that's true.
Sure. Okay, like, I just want it to be consistent, and I want someone at the company to know what the shit is and and be able to filter it. Like, if their policy is we don't sell pornography, and if DMP or whoever is trying to sell, you know, something that is at, you know, absolutely pornography, I want someone at the company to know which category this particular product fits into. That's all I want. Like, someone who works there who can categorize the stuff.
Because I guess what's been hard is what I've heard, and I don't know who told me this anecdotally, was that Apple and Amazon has not given them guidelines that they can use. Like, clear guidelines. Okay, this kind of butt sex, no good. This kind of butt sex, okay. I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, and again, like, whose fault is that?
I really don't know.
Like, whose fault is that? Like, is that on the publisher? Like, is the publisher not telling them, like, hey, this stuff is explicit?
The publisher, I mean, from what I hear, it's like, if the publishers are saying, if you give me a guideline I can work within, I'll filter this stuff for you. I will know which ones are safe within your guidelines and which ones won't. I won't force you to read it to figure this out. I will sort this out. But the fact is, they keep moving the goalposts or moving the guidelines, you know? So it's like, sometimes this is okay and sometimes this is not. Wait, what? So I don't know what the reluctance is to give these clear guidelines are, but I think that's a factor out there.
Yeah, I'm all for equal opportunity, and like, I just want everyone to sell the same thing, the same people, and I'm with those public, like, I'm okay with Apple saying you can't sell porn on the iTunes store. I'm okay with Amazon saying you can't sell porn on Amazon, even though Amazon sells porn.
Hello, 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, we don't need to talk about, like, glorified Twilight fan fiction at this point. But it's weird, because whenever you get into the censorship topic, there are people who are so hardcore about it, and you don't really know what to say. You don't really know how you should feel about this stuff. But I tend to fall on the side of, like, well, you're a private company. You can do what you want.
Yeah.
And if you just state what it is you want to do and what you're okay with, then everyone should just be okay with that, because you are effectively a privately held company.
Right.
You can do what you want.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, like how Chick-fil-A can close on Sunday because
they're fucking
their prerogative.
Gay-hating bigots. Yeah, they close on Sunday because they just can't stand the fact that men have sex with other men. But anyway.
I'm just saying.
Enjoy your waffle fries, you fucking assholes. Anyway, go on.
Ouch.
Well, I mean,
It's been a long week. Sorry, guys.
Well, I mean, I agree with Zach on the fact that, yeah, it would be nice if Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and Books A Million, if all, you know, if the retail outlets were just kind of honest, instead of having one of these generic statements that says something like, we won't sell objectionable or pornographic material. And then when you say, okay, well, can you define that, please? And they're like, well, you know, when you see it, which really means we'll sell it until somebody complains about it, and then we'll pull it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we define pornographic and objectionable. And then if we get enough of people pushing back, then we'll redefine our terms again and say, well, you know, some people will find this objectionable, but tough luck, more people find it acceptable, so we'll sell it. And that's, I think that that's unfortunately the corporate reality is, unless it's going to get us in hot water, we'll sell it. Mm-hmm. So,
and you know, I mean, America's, you know, North America has varying levels of comfort with pornography. You know, I mean, but I remember Yamila from Yowie Press telling me that boys love sells the most in the South in the Bible Belt. Go figure.
What a shock.
I know, right?
So surprised by that information.
Well, let's just say most of those titles are going to be hidden under the bed. So,
yeah.
I guess what everyone's kind of concerned about Apple and Amazon is because as the digital marketplace is evolving, they are, if we are heading towards a world where they are the gatekeepers, then, you know, I mean, what will happen when they are the de facto gatekeepers? You know, what will happen to these books that these gatekeepers don't like?
Well, I think what you end up doing is you get a secondary underground market that's going to sell you applications that aren't officially part of iTunes, but will work on those devices. Google Ads will tell you this. If there are unlicensed iTunes apps for, you know, various pornography companies out there, if you want to download them and put them onto your iPad and or your iPhone, you just can't get Apple support. I mean, if that program crashes, don't call Apple and ask them, how do you fix it? Mm.
Sublime is doing that too, right? I mean, Sublime is not going through the iTunes store at all.
No, they're just selling PDFs directly.
Yes, right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you'll get...
Which you can upload and read on your iPad, your Kindle, your Nook, and so on.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, you just create a market that isn't a part of the official distribution network, but that, you know, still functions fine.
And that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. wow. All right. Zero Intelligence asks, has the manga industry been improving so far? I feel like this is sort of a basic question. I would say I kind of agree with you guys. Like, it's in a period of major transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows? I don't think we can say that the patient is out of the hospital yet. I think things are picking up again. I see more titles coming out. More titles coming out digitally. I don't think we're going back to the days when we had a ton of releases. I mean, we're obviously hurt by the fact that several companies have left the business, and that's the companies that have remained have cut down on their release schedules. But I think things are better than they were in the days immediately following the demise of Borders, where things were just really, people were getting laid off left and right, and series were getting canceled left and right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually interested. I mean, Drawn in Quarterly, they're not putting out a lot of product, but they're being consistent in their output, and they're putting out some, you know, stuff that I'm really happy to see available in English. Fantagraphics is slowly putting out some stuff. So and then we've got Right Stuff is experimenting with POD. So there are signs of health in the industry where people are feeling like the worst is over and they can start maybe committing to things again. But yeah, it's not going to be like it was in, let's say, 2007 or 2008, when it was literally 10 volumes of manga coming out every week,
mm-hmm.
all year long, so that you were getting, you know, because Tokyo Pop was the one who used to brag, but it was something like Tokyo Pop was publishing at the height something like 50 series every year. Mm. I mean, that's insane.
Mm.
So yeah, we're not gonna see that kind of flooding of the market. But again, you know, with J Manga, where they might be able to make digital deals that don't cost as much for them, you know, you might still be able to get those really weird titles that you can't believe anybody would translate. So,
And G Manga is also publishing several Tokyopop titles that were abandoned.
And CMX too. Yeah, they're reprinting a lot of the CMX stuff too. So,
which is something that, you know, they said from the get go that this is something they wanted to do. This is a gap they wanted to fill. And I think, you know, they're doing it, which is great.
Okay. Invalid Name asks, store shelves jam manga genres, shoujo, shonen, etc. together. Mm-hmm. Do you find people drift between genres?
Drift between genres? I think everyone, you know, has different tastes. I really don't know too many people who solely read shoujo, you know. They'll read some shonen, they'll read some shoujo, they'll read some seinen, as it appeals to their taste. I'm not sure what the question is referring to, honestly.
Well, and I don't think the genre distinctions mean as much to the American market as they do to the Japanese market. And some, I mean, because some things aren't actually technically in the appropriate genre marking. Like, I mean, if we were really going to be like very strict about how we shelf books, technically Cheese Sweet Home and Yotsuba would have to be shelved with the seinen, because mm-hmm. they run in seinen magazines. Now, nobody in their right mind is going to shelf them with like Helsing. That's just insane. You're gonna put them in the all ages section. So some of those genre distinctions in Japan don't work well over here. And then some of it is like, you know, seinen and Jose really are kind of more catch all titles on some level.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some, you know, really, you know, again, Cheese Sweet Home, why is that running in a man's magazine? There's no reason for that, other than the fact that guys like me who are 45 years old don't mind reading cute kitten stories.
No, it's okay. So, I mean, I was talking with Konata Sensei in Toronto and her editor, and we were talking about how it is not a pure and simple kids comic. There are some, as Chris Butcher said, some dark themes going on. You know, like she goes through some hard times, and you know she's separated from her mother. It's not as cut and dried a kid's comic as you might think.
Yeah, what are those hard times? Like, really? That's like saying like, oh man, fucking My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, and it's dark shit, man. You don't even know. Like, there's an episode where she it's totally goes through some shit that's dark. Like, come on. Like, I've read Cheese Sweet Home. Like, yeah, it is actually, you know, it's a good comic. But it's family friendly, like, through and through.
It is definitely family friendly. And I guess what I'm saying is that, I mean, I agree with Ed that the distinctions of saying Jose Seinen, Shoujo Shonen are blurring a lot. And they somehow feel not relevant to the American market. Like when we do the best and worst manga panel at San Diego, which we're doing again this year, woo!
Congratulations.
I don't say, we early on decided not to do best shonen manga, best shoujo manga, best seinen manga, best josei manga. We said best manga for grown-ups, best manga for teens and kids. Period.
This is probably a better way to do it.
I think it is.
Seems like a much better way to do it. Like, these classifications seem like they're just, like, who are they for? Are they just for us? Like, people who already know how to categorize this stuff in our heads? Like, who are they for? Shonen,
and even if they
shoujo,
were originally meant for that audience in Japan, technically.
Does it matter?
Does it matter?
Does it matter? Right. I don't think it matters. I really don't think it matters.
And that's, I mean, it's not a popular argument among some of the more hardcore manga readers, but.
But this is Super Manga Pals, and we're blowing shit up. We are blowing shit up.
Well, no, I agree with you. And that's why I can't, like, you know, if when people want to get really picky and technical, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but for me, Cheese Sweet Home is always an all ages comic. Yotsuba is always an all ages comic. I'm just, you know, if you want to call them seinen because that makes you feel you happy because you know the original magazine they ran in, fine. But guess what? I'm going to promote them to kids and adults alike. I'm not going to restrict the audience that I'm trying to promote these books to,
right?
Based on the Japanese publisher.
Word. Exactly. Like, can't we just say, like, shut the fuck up about, you know, the magazine it ran in. Maybe I can just talk about the shit how I want to talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. is that so hard?
Yeah.
Is that so hard?
I think that's alienating to the general audience.
It is. It's not your special fucking treehouse. These are comics. These are comics. We all want to love them, and we want to make sure that as many people can love them as possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so Super Manga Pals are assembling tonight to deliver you this message. Shut the fuck up. It's not your special treehouse. They're just fucking comic books that we all love.
All right.
Unfortunately, I can't just name the episode Super Manga Pals. Shut the fuck up. I can't. So
we're Super Manga Pals and you're not. Whatever. God, we're bitter.
Anyway.
Oh, so plug away, yeah? Best and Worst Manga Panel, Saturday, July 14th, 6 o'clock p.m.
We're not even a fourth of the way through this fucking Twitter.
Oh yeah. We have to pick it up because I have to bail in about an hour.
You got an hour? Okay, we better hurry. Zero Intelligence asks, are any of you looking forward to Kodansha's English release of Attack of the Titans?
Definitely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. The answer to that one is yes.
I haven't read it yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Sewing Rose 11 asks, what cons are y'all looking forward to the most? Tips for getting the best stuff in the dealer's room.
Well, I'm only going to two this year, so that would be Anime Mid-Atlantic and Otakon. So I'm looking forward to those because that's it for me. And then as far as tips, here's your problem. You can either go for the guaranteed to get it or try for the bargain price. And as anybody who goes to cons knows, usually on Sunday you can get some discounts, but what you're getting discounts in on is whatever's left on the table. Mm-hmm. So if there's something you really want, my recommendation is generally to go down to the dealer's room on Friday, because generally that's the least packed day of the con. Mm-hmm. Get your stuff that you absolutely have to have, and then if there's stuff you want to have but you're not really sure about, then you can leave that stuff for Sunday and see if you can get a deal on it. So, and look for, and the other thing is shop around. They, dealers don't all have the same prices. So, you know, if you see it at one table, just make a note of where you're at and then look around. You might find it for 20% or 30% lower somewhere else.
And sometimes you can get good deals if you go to comic shops that don't know what they have.
Mm. Yes. True.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up like Tezuka's Phoenix for pretty good prices in dusty comic shops that specialize in superhero stuff.
Or even at comic conventions where, like, at Baltimore, although this is kind of funny now, because, you know, last year when Baltimore Comic Con happened, we didn't know that Vertical was going to be reprinting Adolf. And so one of the comic dealers had all of the Viz volumes of Adolf, so you could get the whole series for half cover price.
Mm.
Whereas online, if you wanted to get Adolf, it was, you know, like $40 a volume or some crazy stuff that nobody ever pays. So yeah, I mean, sometimes you can pick up out of print stuff at, you know, half or more off of the cover price, simply because it's a comic store and he just wants to get rid of old stock.
Let's see, I'm going to San Diego Comic Con next. That's in mid July, and I'm probably going to go to New York Comic Con in October, and YaoiCon in October, I believe, as well. I think that's it for me, though.
Yeah, I mean, for manga fans, like, actually, not necessarily manga fans, but manga collectors, like, those anime conventions are kind of gold mines. Like, you're going to go in there, and you're going to find shit that you would not find anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. I found Cyborg 009.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I have a list of, you know, things that I really want to, you know, dig around for. And it's really helpful to have a list, because otherwise you'll say, oh, I'll get this. And he said, which volume do I have? I can't remember. So I've ended up with double volumes of things just because I can't remember. So yes, list is important.
Yeah, it's that way too for DVD collectors.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the $1 million question. Big on Anime asks, what's your stance on scanlations?
Everybody knows my stance on scanlations, and I won't talk about it anymore.
You literally refuse to talk about your stance.
No, I mean, you know, I've said it over and over again, and I just don't want to rehash it again. You guys can go.
Well, I mean, I've been anti-scanlation, and I'm not really sure what else there's to talk about. I mean, but it's up to your own conscience. I mean, I can't make you not read the material. I wish you wouldn't read the material. And again, you know, I mean, this goes back to the fact that if you like an artist's work and you want them to continue to do it, they have to make money so that they don't have to get another job. Because guess what? There is no government program that lets you draw manga or comics 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, and then just sends you a magic paycheck. You know, you got to sell product to be able to continue to do that stuff. So, you know, the gray area is if you want to go out and buy the Japanese volumes and then download the scans because you can't read Japanese, I actually don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. I know there's some people who are like really hardcore who are like, oh God, any use of scans is just god awful. But you know, in all of life, there's gray. So you know, you do what you can.
I guess I have a hard time talking about scanlation because to truly explain how I feel about it explains delving into the gray areas and
right.
And I kind of don't want to right now. It's too much. It's too much to explain that this is okay, but not this, and this kind of is okay, but this is not. It's too long a topic. It's its own topic.
Well, here's how I feel. I think that scanlations are, like, in 2012, they're probably hurting the manga industry way more than fansubs ever had a chance to hurt the anime industry.
Mm.
I can type manga. If I type manga into the App Store,
mm-hmm.
Well, anyone can do that. And they can see. Other people are making money off of scanlations.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all pirate applications. Like, this is straight up fucking piracy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are unscrupulous people who have nothing to do with the production of these shows, production mm-hmm. of these comics, or the translations, or anything like that. They're just stealing.
Mm-hmm.
They're stealing, mm-hmm. and they're just making money on it. And it's fucking horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really horrible. I don't understand how anyone is okay with this shit. It's really bad. Like, it is really bad out there.
My feelings about it
what
is
I'm
generally...
What I'm saying is,
if you get the artist permission, then okay. But most of them don't even bother to get the artist permission. And that kind of sucks.
The pirate apps get permission from... Some of the pirate apps get permission from the artist?
No. I'm just saying the pirate apps are uniformly horrible. But I'm saying the fans who scanlate artists' works, you know, like, did you ever bother to ask the artist if that was okay? You obviously can speak Japanese, you know, and because I've heard of some situations where some artists, some scanlators in the BL community reach out to the artists and they get their okay and they're okay with it.
Okay.
That, and then to me, that was like, okay, as long as the artist is okay with it, then I'm okay with it. But the fact that you do this without their permission and assume that you are doing something noble, I don't know. I have a little bit of a problem with that.
This shit is out of fucking control.
It is out of control.
Like, I cannot believe how easy it is for me to pirate manga on my mm-hmm. Apple device.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Why is that so easy? Why is that so easy for me?
Well, and the irony is that, you know, Apple is scared to death to sell you porn, but they have no problem selling pirated merchandise. And when you contact them and say, hey, you know, X application is selling manga that they do not have the license for.
Mm-hmm.
Apple doesn't care. You know,
yeah, they're like, this is a big problem. That's the other corollary to what we're talking about. The yaoi thing is that the sheer hypocrisy here is ridiculous.
So basically the conclusion that we've come to is that, the people who are actually in charge of this shit, they're not really paying attention, and they don't really know what manga is.
No, they don't, and that's a problem.
No.
And so they're totally okay with someone making money on pirated material because they don't know what manga is.
Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the misunderstandings come. I mean, even the case that got dismissed earlier this year, you know, the guy who went to Canada and got almost got thrown in jail for what was on his computer. that also came from a misunderstanding of what manga is, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, that's a good example. That's what a crazy example.
It's so hard not to get riled up about this shit.
It is.
It's a very misunderstood genre. I mean, even within comic fandom, manga is very misunderstood. And so, yeah, we've, you know, for in some ways things are getting better. In some ways, we've got a lot of work to do.
I guess so. It feels like there are enough of us. Well, shouldn't we be able to do something?
I'd love to think so.
I guess
I don't know. I don't know what though. But I mean, I guess the more that we talk about these kind of issues, we are reaching people. You know.
Sure.
I do feel like less. Like when I first started doing this blog 5 years ago, I dealt with a lot more people who were angry at me for my stance on Scanlation. Like. Irrationally angry at me. And now I get people who are a little more, oh, I see your point. Not everybody. I still get my share of people who think I'm so full of it.
It's real easy to get mad about this shit, but when you see it, it's so enraging. Like, it makes your heart beat. Anyway.
So what could we do that would be, you know, concrete and specific? I mean, because, I mean, we all passed around that essay by that, I forget who wrote it, but just pulling this out, saying this is clearly wrong and hypocritical. I think, you know, maybe the way to go about it is to draw attention to this to all the tech blogs, you know.
I don't think that, you know, see, that's the thing, Deb. Like, I don't think they care.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't care. They look at it and they're like, Japanese comics, who gives a shit? Like,
who could, I mean, so what could we do?
Well, I mean,
well,
some
I could
of
do
it,
so, I, it feels, I feel like I could do something. I could do something. Like, we have a massive audience in the Anime News Network. I feel like we could easily do something.
That'd be great.
Right.
I think you could. I mean, I think you could spread the word in a significant way. I mean, if you know, fans mobilizing can get Amazon to do an about face on their treatment of DMP, who knows?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I hope.
Okay. What do you think about programs and initiatives to get more manga and graphic novels into libraries?
Well, it's already happening.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, Scott Robbins and Snow Wildsmith just wrote a really wonderful book about kids' comics. And it was, they spotlight a lot of great manga. I think that's one step. ALA is coming up, American Library Association. There is a lot of librarians who are very keen on manga, and they know that a lot of librarians know that their patrons love manga as well. What you can do, what any person can do, is go to your neighborhood library and say, hey, here's the titles I like. Can you get them in for me? And every librarian loves them. I think that's the best thing to do.
Well, and librarians have been very friendly to graphic novels, to be honest with you. I'm on the Graphic Novels for Libraries email list, and they're, you know, they see kids coming in to read books. So things like Naruto, Bleach, Iron Man, Avengers, all that stuff gets kids into libraries. And then, you know, hopefully as they're looking at one set of books, maybe they'll check out another set of books. I mean, it's the same thing for like Harry Potter or The Hunger Games. Those got kids into libraries. Those got kids looking around at the bookshelf in the young adult section. So, you know, anything that gets kids into libraries and gets them to look and start reading more, you know, obviously I encourage. So, I think the problem most libraries are having isn't the enthusiasm of the staff's part. It's the problem of just not having the money to stock everything they would love to stock. Mm-hmm. You know, most libraries are dealing with severe budget cuts. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real struggle. I mean, they, you know, they have to fight for every book that they're getting in. They have to prove that it has an audience, that the audience has a certain size. So, mm-hmm. It's really frustrating, particularly in a bad economy, because libraries are going to be the first place that you can really trim a budget and just say, well, you can't buy that many books this year. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the struggle. So if you can support your local library, I always tell people this, don't throw out your old manga. If you're You know, if you're not going to read your Rurouni Kenshins, or if you're not going to read any more Bleach, then donate those, because libraries can use those. And that helps them get books that other books into their system. So, yeah, I mean, think about donating books to libraries, and yeah, and just go visit them and use them, because the only way they can keep a budget is if they actually have patrons.
Rachel?
Okay. V-Guy. We got some V-Guy questions. They are not about even going. For the first time, he asks, should we be happy that Hetalia is being released by Riot Stuff, or angry that Sue Levy is making them pay through the nose to do so?
Ooh. How do they know if they're making them pay through the nose to do so?
No, I don't think that's actually happening, so I'm just going to...
I think that's a question.
I'm happy that Hetalia is getting a chance to get printed. I seriously doubt that Stu Livy is getting a lot of money from this, because I don't think it's going to be that profitable. So I can't imagine Right Stuff.
With Gintosha too.
Yeah. Well, and I can't imagine that Right Stuff is going to pay like $30,000 for the rights to Hetalia, because they're not going to make $30,000.
Yeah.
I would just kind of caution people about assuming that anything that has Stu Levy's name attached to it is automatically a muddy grubbing enterprise.
Right.
It's this guy's making an assertion that he can't prove, I think.
Your friend of mine, Corey Prof, Munracker, asks, what are your reading habits outside of manga? And what are some of your favorite books?
Believe it or not, I just read Hunger Games for the first time. Yeah, years later, I had to catch a plane, and you know,
really came over the zeitgeist, Deb.
No, you know me. I mean, I don't get time to read a lot of prose because I have so much manga to read, honestly. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not reading manga, I'm reading online, you know, news and blogs and whatever, or I'm reading nonfiction and magazines. I read a lot of news magazines, so. Yeah, sorry. I wish I had time to read more novels, but my reading habits are such that if I really like a novel, I will stay up all night for days to read it all the way through. And I don't have time for that. I'm sorry. Ed?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm in the same boat that you are. I'm not reading as much, as I'd like to. As far as favorite books, I'm predominantly a really big fantasy fan, so Lord of the Rings for me is something that I've read at least 5 or 6 times in my life now. So that would be the one I always kind of mention. And then I'm actually a fan of Golden Age sci-fi. So short stories by Asimov, Bradbury, Joseph Campbell. Those guys, I will read those, and then Lovecraft is the other one, is the other passion. I have no problem reading through a ton of his short stories, you know, in a sitting. So that's about it for me. Yeah, I mean, I would love to be more caught up, but I find I end up just reading old stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and if I read for fun, I read more like short stories, or I'll read essays like. Was it Lester Bangs? Like people like Susan Orleans or Lester Bangs, you know, people mm-hmm. who write about media, people who are really good at a particular turn of a phrase. That's kind of what I've been reading. And then I, of course, read other types of graphic novels too. I read a lot of books about Japanese culture. I mean, I have a ridiculous amount of books, but nowadays I mostly read manga.
Yeah, lately I've been reading Warren Littlefield's book, Top of the Rock, his memoir of his time at the top of NBC during the must-see TV years, which is fucking fascinating. If you just are really curious about what it takes to negotiate a contract with Andy Dick, like, read that book. Because it's good. It's very good. Still getting through Song, Ice, and Fire. Still doing that shit. Like everyone else in the world.
Yeah, I do too.
And I don't know about you guys, but I tend to stick to nonfiction. I'm not sure why I do that too.
I mean, maybe it's because at least with nonfiction, I'll come away having learned something.
Yes. See?
And I can kind of skim it, you know, whereas prose, I guess I've gone through these periods where I've read a prose novel and wasted precious hours reading it, get to the end and go, what?
Yeah.
Oh, hell to no. You know, I mean, at least a bad movie will only waste like 2 hours of my day.
Yeah.
A bad novel will waste several days and will make me infinitely more angry.
Deb, I love you for saying that. That is exactly how I feel.
Well, and I think that's why I miss the short story market. I mean, that's one of the nice things, you know, again, in the 30s, 40s, up to the 50s, you know, there weren't really a lot of science fiction novels. The market was driven by the short stories and the short story magazines. And, you know, sometimes I think the problem with that loss of those short story magazines is, you know, sometimes you only got a 30-page idea. But, you know, in this market, you have to make it at least 150 pages. So I tend to like the you know, people who have that sense of, okay, I have an interesting idea, but it's just interesting enough to explore and then get out. And you can't really spend a lot of time here. So that's why I like a lot of the early sci-fi, because it's usually, you know, it's some little quirky twist that they want to look at. They do it for 30 pages and then you're out and you're like, oh, that's interesting. And something nice and light, and you can get away. You can go home quick. Well, and I was going to say that I think the other thing is when you spend a lot of time reading fiction because you're like reviewing it, I think the nice thing is you want to read nonfiction as a break. And the older you get, the more interesting I think nonfiction becomes for you, because life is generally tends to be a lot stranger and does better plot twists than most novelists. So when you're reading like a biography or books about like some historical event, it's more interesting because this really happened. It's not somebody didn't make this up in their head. This is somebody tracing a timeline, and it's like, okay, this sounds crazy, but it happened, and there are documents to prove it happened. And wow, like you said, like negotiating a contract with Andy Dick. You know, if you read that in a novel, how much of it would you be willing to accept, and how much you'd be like, oh, this guy's just a nut. I mean, he's just making stuff up. But then when you're reading it and you're like, oh, yeah, there are people this crazy.
Well, I also just finished Drift, Rachel Maddow's book, about the military industrial complex. And that that was tough shit, man. That was really tough to read. So that wraps it up. Thank you guys for coming on the show. We love you here. Big thanks to Super MAGA Pals. It's Deb Aoki and Ed Sizemore. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Deb and Ed for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a little rating, a little review. We would really appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.